Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of The Close-Up, a part of the Orlando Magic HQ Network. Today, we got a really fun episode. We got my good friend Richard Stayman joining the show of Mavs Draft, founder of MavsDraft.com and host of Locked On NBA Big Board with Locked On Network. Richard, how you doing, man? You just got back from the Orlando Magic versus the Mavericks game, and you're a fan of both teams. So, like, how you feeling? You calmed down? Your emotions a little high, a little low?
The Mavs Draft Bowl was intense. Obviously anticipating, so I didn't really know what to expect. And everyone asked me, like, who are you rooting for? And usually most years it's easy. Like, the Mavs generally have been the better team over the last 10 years. So correct. It's easy. I'm like, yeah, the Mavs need the win. Magic are trying to tank. Not this year. And I haven't adapted to the Magic being good. And in my head, I'm like, okay, like, I'm just happy to be here. But then when the Magic blew the 16-point lead, I was like, at halftime, I was so confident. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm wearing a Magic shirt. Like, it's a one chance a year. But every single play, I was like, yeah, you know, clapping, whatever, being a fan for every play either side. But with when it got to 16 and a half, I was like, okay, I mean, Dallas will put up a fight. They always do this. They get close. They never pull it off. Then they pulled it off, and I was in disbelief. I really thought Franz hit that shot at the end too. I was stressed out. Like, that was a tough, tough game. Like, we'll get into the weeds of it, but I am not recovered.
It's tough because also, like, you go through the emotional roller coaster of that game. It's close. It comes down to the wire, and then you're rushing home, shoving food down your face to then hop on a podcast immediately and talk about it. So, like, adrenaline at full force makes perfect sense. Well, dude, before we get into it, and listeners, we got a great show coming up for you. You know, we're going to get into this Magic Maverick game where the Mavs, where the Magic lost in a really close game. We're going to get into some other topics like Cole Anthony. Is this the player he currently is? And then just some more other broad general season thoughts about the trade deadline and roster issues and stuff like that. But before we get into that with Richard, just want to remind you guys of a couple of things. All right. First and foremost, if you're on Instagram, go check out our page and go check out our Instagram subscription program. It's $5 a month to join. That $5 just comes back to us. It helps us make this program better, make all of our programs better, and helps us do more giveaways for things, you know, jerseys, hats, jackets, all sorts of fun Magic related things. It gets you into our group chat. It gets you into discounted home game tickets. The Magic just released another group of home game tickets for up to 20% off for our subscribers. We do private, group chat conversations, and then we do exclusive posts and reels and stories and stuff just for you all. It's a lot of fun. So think about joining that. Also, this podcast is presented by Bet Online. It's playoff time, and the road to Vegas goes down through San Francisco and Baltimore. Bet Online is your number one source for playoff football odds, stats, trends, and lines, with everything from point spreads to hundreds of player performance props. Richard, are you a gambler? You're muted, my brother.
So sorry. I realized.
No, you're good.
No.
Yeah.
No. I used to, but not like anything intense.
if you were to gamble, BetOnline's the place to do it. But like, where are you leaning for the Super Bowl now that we know? Are you going Baltimore? Are you going San Francisco? Kind of.
My
where's
gut
your heart
says
at?
Kansas City.
Oh, sorry, Kansas City, not Baltimore.
No, yeah. You're good. My gut says KC because you can't doubt Mahomes. But my gut's been really wrong lately, so I'm going to go San Francisco. I'm going to go full Costanza and go the opposite.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm in the Bay, so I kind of got to go San Francisco. That's where I put my money on right now. I was thinking the Lions were going to get there, but they lost. San Francisco beat them out in a tough game. So that's where I would go. And if I were to make this bet, I would just simply go to BetOnline. So for all you listeners, head over to BetOnline today to stay up to date on all the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And the last thing, this podcast is presented by Believe Podcast Network. We're stoked to be a part of them. All right, Richard, we've gotten all that out of the way. We're stoked to do all that stuff, but now's the nitty gritty time. Now's where you and I get to have a conversation about this Magic team, this basketball, the game that just went on. So I just want to set the table for a second, right? So the Magic lost to the Dallas Mavericks in a 2-point game. It came down to the final couple of minutes, some big shots being made, 3-pointers going back and forth with Franz and Luka, Paolo doing Paolo things. And then it came down to the fouling game, the last minute or so, and trying to trap players and force turnovers and ultimately just hoping someone's going to miss a free throw. A couple of other things. Magic were shooting hot this game. They shot 48% from three, which is a rarity for this team. The Mavs also shot 47% from three. The Magic won all three. They won three out of the four quarters. They won the first quarter. They won the second quarter. They blew the third quarter by only scoring 12 points compared to the Mavericks, 35. But then again, they won the fourth quarter. So really, like, we'll get into it, but I just kind of wanted to lay all that out there. When I say all this to you, what are like some of the bigger moments and things that have stuck out with this game? You being there live in person, again, being a really big Orlando Magic fan, but also living in the area and being a really big Dallas Mavericks fan, which makes total sense.
Yeah. First, real quick background, if you're wondering, I was born in Orlando, moved to Dallas when I was a young kid, didn't know who to root for. So I've just stuck with the inconsistent or indecision my whole life and just chose both. So for tonight's game, I think there's a few things. One, the Mavs have had this game plan, one of their absolute strategies. It's burned them a lot. You might remember it in the playoffs against Phoenix. And then also even in the regular season, if you've watched a lot of Mavs basketball for whatever reason on an Orlando Magic podcast, I think what you might remember is Ish Wainwright had a game where he made 5 threes because it was Luka's man. But what he did was he just watched him. And I think that happened even last year when KD was one of his first games as a son. They played the Mavs and they do this thing all the time where they're like, just beg him and dare him to shoot. They tried that with Anthony Black. What they didn't know is actually Anthony Black's not that bad of an open shooter. I know the numbers are like mediocre, but like when you put in perspective, like when he's actually open, he is a decent shooter. Like he right. has the touch. It's something that we do all project for him to eventually grow into. So I think that was something that really burned them. And I'm surprised that they didn't really adapt to it. They didn't really adapt to Anthony Black. They kind of figured out ways just to go, it's fine. And in a way it worked because in the second half, he didn't really do anything on the offensive end. But on the first half, I mean, he's a massive reason, if not the very biggest, honestly, that the lead was so big at halftime.
Oh yeah. I mean, I had a tweet at halftime, and it said something along the lines of like, Paolo's 21 years old. Anthony Black is 19 years old. They're both the leading scorers of this game, or for the Magic at 22 points for Paolo. And I think at that point, Anthony Black had 16 points. I think he had 16 points at the halftime. And it's just like, it's just pretty cool thinking about the effects that Anthony Black can have on this team. You know, most of the time when we think about him, it's for his defense, right? You know, he's already playing defense at a really high NBA level. I mean, obviously he's got improvements to do there, but that's what keeps him on the floor. That's why, you know, Coach Mosley consistently will bring him on, you know, as a replacement player when someone's missing kind of in 1 through 3, right? But tonight you see him, you know, God, that beautiful spin move at the end of the second in the right corner was just like phenomenal, taking that nice mid drive, you know, hitting a couple open threes. It was just like a really solid game for Black. I mean, sorry, not a couple. He hit 4 for 4 from three. Like, he had a perfect game from there. And so it was just like really fun. And you're right, you know, they adjusted for that in the second half. He wasn't able to find his offensive rhythm as much. You know, they made the right adjustments for Anthony Black. When you see a game like this from Anthony Black, and you also just see like how coaches used Anthony Black throughout the season, is it sort of how you like? I want to take this back a little bit. I know we were going to focus just mostly on this game for a moment, but I want to kind of like take it back for a second. Like, you're a draft like expert. You come on my show 2 or 3 times a year as we lead up to the draft to talk draft stuff and, you know, educate us. What were your thoughts on Anthony Black then, and kind of how have they changed now halfway through the season?
Yeah, 2 things. First of all, I mean this in the nicest way, but isn't it nice that I don't have to come on here and be talk draft now? Like, I'd love to be on your show more. But like, is it not nice that we don't have to worry about like in the middle of January go, all right, who's the next pick? You know, like it's really refreshing to say, well, what's going to happen in the playoffs instead of, you know, knock on wood so far.
We might not even have a first round pick to talk about this year, potentially. Yep. I mean, we could, but I mean, we, you know, the chances are we are, but we will have you on the show to talk about that pick. We will. That's just tradition at this point. But yes, it's refreshing to not be like chasing the bottom.
Yep. So with Anthony Black, I was a huge fan of him. I warmed up to him later in the process. So he's from DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, which is also, I'm 100% convinced, that was a big part of him hitting those open threes. Like, he came out with a mission. His family was, I know the family section, his family was all there. They were all there for the game, and he wanted to show out, and he absolutely did. I mean, I think he had 20 points, right?
Correct.
I mean, that was insane. And with him at Arkansas, the shooting was always a concern. And honestly, even before then, I thought the shooting and turnovers were something that really worried me. And I was like, he's not ready to contribute right away because of those 2 things. How's he going to stay on the floor? But then I started watching his defense, and just, I think, watching even him in space at Arkansas, which in college isn't easy to come by because the court is so crowded. Like, you have 2 bigs. They play a very still outdated system when you watch the NBA. And Anthony Black was always going to be struggling, not only offensively, I thought, because he had to adapt to NBA spacing, but defensively, I didn't think he was strong enough to really handle these guys. But I mean, he is staying in guys' grills, and I think that's huge. So for me, I expected him to be the defensive guy. The playmaking hasn't been as high level as I thought it would be in terms of volume. The jump shot is better than I thought. Like, the jump shot I thought was so far away. The form never looked great, but the form hasn't really changed. He just seems to have gotten more reps and more confidence. So clearly, if it's not broken, don't fix it. It's just something he might need more reps at. So ultimately, though, I've been super impressed.
Yeah, it's been refreshing. I understood why the Magic made that pick there. You know, and I don't know if we'll get into like, we might get into this later, but like pick 11 was kind of weird, but Anthony Black at 6 made a lot of sense for multiple reasons. And we kind of saw it tonight, you know, like Fultz is resting, you know, for maintenance, right? You know, he's got an injury history. So it drafting a point guard, long-term outlook, isn't the worst thing in the world, in my opinion, that's got size at 6'7". Back to the game tonight, he obviously had a really big impact on the first half, right? You know, like you said, I think the Magic were leading at the halftime around 16 points. You know, Paolo was going off. And then the Magic just had this third quarter collapse, right? We learned that Jonathan Isaac, who started the game, did not come back. Coach admitted in post game, I was listening to it, you know, in between us starting recording in the game. And he admitted that it was, you know, they're thinking long term. It wasn't, he wasn't feeling great at the halftime, you know, or at least well enough to come back. So they said, you know what, let's not force it. You know, we're thinking long term with J.I. He won't play in the second half, you know, and then. So that's where you see like bumped up minutes for Mo Wagner. You know, Cole Anthony's playing a lot more. Paulo hits almost 40 minutes. There's a lot of tweaks going on there to make up for Jonathan Isaac's, you know, potential eight minutes or so that he was going to play. But outside of that, it was just an awful third quarter. The Magic couldn't hit a shot. I think they went like 6 minutes without hitting a shot offensively before Mo Wagner started hitting a couple of threes. When you look at that third quarter, like, was it the Mavericks making the adjustments that caused them to win it that bad? Or was it the Magic failing to make the right adjustments to slow the bleeding down a little bit? Like, kind of like, how do you view that? And like, whose fault was it, you know, like, in a sense? Yeah.
It was a little bit of both. I would say it's like 60-40. The Mavs went to a zone defense, and what it did was it forced the Magic to take one of two things. The Mavs knew they were bad. The Magic are not a good three-point shooting team. So either you're going to go towards the holes, which are generally the corners in the zone, and you're going to take those shots. And now we saw some of that with Anthony Black, but they tinkered with it a little bit, and they didn't leave it exactly as open as they did in the first half. They forced the Magic to take contested shots at the rim, which – a few of them, actually, not even all of them were contested. The Magic blew some open layups. I mean, there were a good amount of times where I was like, okay, they're clearly on a back-to-back, because you watch some of these layups, and last night they made them. This tonight on the road back-to-back, they didn't. And I think that was part of it, too, was just a little bit of tired legs caught up to them. But it kind of – I say that, but at the same time, like, they got pretty hot from three at times in the fourth quarter, like Franz Wagner mostly. But still, like, it was very much that. I think Orlando just didn't find a way to creatively put a hole into the zone. And I think that's ultimately what did it. They kind of played into the Mavs' hand. I think it cost them a little bit. But also with Isaac, like, he was the difference of the game. And also, just to paint a picture in the standings, the Magic and Heat have the same record. They had it going into the night. Now they're both 24 and 23. The Pacers are 27 and 20. This would have been a great opportunity to close that gap between, I mean, that's the 8-7 sixth seed. The Magic, because of tiebreakers, are the 8 seed. The Magic could have been 25 and 22, which is 2 games behind the Pacers. And if you're 2 games behind the Pacers, you're 2 games away from getting a bye from the play-in. So obviously it's early, but those things do add up. And if they are one game short, we're going to point to this and go, well, honestly, like, if Jonathan Isaac had been playing, the Magic probably don't lose that.
Yeah, I mean, nightly I'm looking at the game recaps and just seeing who in the East is winning and who in the East is losing, and how is that adjusting our standings with them. You know, there was a while there about 2 weeks ago where we had a much bigger gap and we were like solidly in eighth place, but then Miami started going on this big losing streak and we've caught up, right? And that's with us winning just a couple of games in like a 2 or 3 week period. But yeah, you know, Jonathan Isaac had such a big effect on that starting on that first half. You know, he started the game. They did a Jalen Suggs, Franz Wagner at the two, Paolo Banchero, Jonathan Isaac, and Wendell Carter Jr. And it was just big. You know, Dallas countered by going small by entering Tim Hardaway Jr. into the starting lineup, and it worked. Like I mentioned at the start, the Magic won 3 out of the 4 quarters. They even won the fourth quarter, you know, and a lot of that was contributed to that first half with the size and just how they attacked and just stifled the Mavericks offense. Granted, Luke is fucking incredible. Like, we can just be real. That guy is on a heater right now. I think he's averaging like 39 or 40 points per game over the last like 5 games or something like that. It's pretty insane. Do you know it off the top of your head or quickly?
I think it might be 45. I mean, it's
insane, dude.
It's like in the 40s. It is insane.
I mean, tonight he had Doncic. He had 45.
Insane. He had 40. Wow.
He had 45.
He sleepwalked into it too.
Paulo had 36, so you know that's fun. You know, ultimately the Magic lose this one. They dug themselves too much into a hole in that third quarter, in my opinion. Like, when you're kind of looking back at the second half and that fourth quarter ending, is there anything else that you would kind of contribute? There was some ref complaining. There was some other little things, you know, Wendell Carter Jr., a couple others were in foul trouble half the game. Like, what are some of your like final thoughts to kind of wrap up this conversation on the Mavericks versus the Magic?
Yeah. So I think I didn't in the moment think like that anything was super egregious at all during the reffing. I know there's a whole thing, Jalen Suggs on the hot mic. There's some questionable, I guess, things, but like ultimately I feel like I hate this phrase because like it's some, I don't know, like I see both sides of it, but like the Magic were putting themselves in tough situations where it's like, how are you going to give the ref the benefit of the doubt? Both teams were doing this a lot, but they were grabbing the arms, like not the wrist. It was like up here. I guess that was a bad angle, but like up here, literally towards the bicep. Like, how are you going to get away with that? Like, if it's the hand wrist, like you can probably squeeze that by because that's a little bit tough to distinguish in live time. But they just didn't really. I don't know. I think they were a little bit overly physical. They tried being incredibly physical with Derek Lively. Obviously, that resulted in Cole Anthony fouling him, the 4-3, which I've never heard before. But
that was wild.
But that Wendell Carter flagrant was a huge swing because it gave, even though it was only 2 points, Mavs won by 2 points.
Correct.
So I think the physicality, it had its pros and its cons. I think early in the first half, the Mavs really did not counter that at all. They were kind of just thrown off by how much they were getting hacked. And or not like hacked, that's the wrong word, but like, you know, just it, like the Magic pushed back. And I don't think the Mavs expected that. So I think eventually just the tables turned and Orlando wasn't prepared.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I mean, you know, if coach makes some different adjustments in the fourth to be able to combat that zone a little bit better, you know, and even score four more points, that's a win. If the fourth quarter stays the same as it was, but they dug themselves too deep into a hole. They couldn't make the right stops at the very end or force the right turnovers to kind of maintain the lead that they had a couple of times. The fourth quarter went back and forth between who was having the lead based on who was making that three-pointer. I mean, Franz went into the game, into the fourth. I think I tweeted there was like 8-9 minutes left and he had only had like 7 shot attempts and had like 8 points or something like that. You know, Franz ends with going 3 of 6 from three. I think all three of those threes were in the fourth quarter, you know, and 21 points. You know, he had an awesome fourth quarter and it was back and forth, but you know, ultimately not enough. Very frustrating loss. To start a road trip, but ultimately, you know, it's like long road trip. This is the first of 5 games. They got the Spurs. They have who's on this road trip? I got the schedule somewhere, but hold on. I'm just gonna pull up the schedule because I don't want to be.
Yeah, I got it right in front of me. So it's San Antonio. Ooh,
yep.
Minnesota, Detroit, and they end back home pretty much with Miami.
Yeah. So it's a long road trip, right? You know, like you said, the Texas gauntlet. You got Minnesota, which is a tough team. They're kind of in a little bit of a rut right now, but they're a tough team. You know, if this Magic team can go 2-3 or 3-2, that would be good. I would hate them to go any worse than 2-3. Hopefully we can get an extra win in there and go 3-2. That'd be nice for this Magic roster. All right, man. So let's kind of move on past this individual game. The Magic right now, as you mentioned earlier, they are 24-23, tied with Miami for 7th in the East. You know, trying to get up to that 6th spot, you know, and secure some better standings in the playoff race. The Magic started off this season just super hot. You know, one of the best teams in the East. I think around the quarter time, they were sitting in like a 4th or 5th spot, you know, with the top 3 defense in the league. They've done all right defensively. They've had some slippages here and there, but ultimately I think they're still sitting around 5. And then, you know, we kind of know what happened in December and January. Injuries up and down. What are your overall thoughts on this team just like kind of at this little bit of the halfway point right now?
Yeah, I mean, all things considered, if you know, I told you, hey, they're going to be the eighth seed in the East a few games after the halfway point. Like, I think everyone would be pretty happy with that, especially given that they're one game over 500. Like, that, I think, is the most impressive part. Like, if you look at what their record is when everyone's healthy, I mean, it really comes down to a few things. One, did Franz Wagner play? And two, did Jonathan Isaac play? Like, when it comes down to that, you're not going to have many off nights. Like, it's natural in an 82 game season. Sometimes you have the duds. Like, you got to move on from those. But overall, the identity is there, and it keeps them in the games in so many different times. I've been just extremely impressed. I do think it shapes the future a little bit weird because, I mean, just I want to say it was during the winning streak, actually. Was the Atlanta game in Mexico City during that, or is that like moments before?
That was right before. Yeah.
So I remember that's when Anthony Black kind of started getting like real minutes. It was right around then. And then they went on the winning streak. And I think stuff like that makes me wonder, well, okay, I think Markelle Fultz, I don't think he played for a lot of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Markelle Fultz was out on game after game five, and he did not – him and Wendell both were not a part of the big winning streak.
That's right. So I forgot Wendell was out for it. Fultz, it just feels like it's honestly any given time, which is unfortunate. But I think the thing that it's interesting for me is it goes, well, we just did all this. Most of this has been done without Markelle Fultz, who is an expiring contract. Is the time up? And it's a tough question because I think if you ask most Magic fans, we all like him. We all wish he was a little bit better at shooting. But I think he's a very likable guy. He's not somebody who you're scapegoating at any point, anything like that. So I am curious what they do at the trade deadline because they've proven they can win without him. Can they get anything in return? Is it enough? Can they package him and Wendell? I am very curious of what the future looks like. But overall, so far, I've been very impressed. Like, they've won games with defense, and they've used their identity that they built over the last couple of years to turn it into tangible results.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a lot of really good points there. And, like, I think one of the ones I want to, like, hit on is, like, you know, their defense. We see them when they play good defense, it often translates to good offense, you know, because they're able to, like, get a stop, push it in transition before the opponents are able to, like, get their defense set. It helps them find their rhythm, even if, like, they are getting their, you know, even if, you know, an opponent scores on them, like, but if they're still playing a high enough defense, just in general, it just gives them, like, the confidence to play a little bit better offensively, in my opinion, where on games when the defense isn't there, the offense often isn't there either. And that's just kind of like a theme I see. Yeah, man, you mentioned the Markelle Fultz thing, man. Like, I was just having this conversation with a couple of people in one of my group chats, shout out Pat and Remy, where, like, Markelle Fultz seems like a really solid human being, seems like a good teammate that everyone likes, really high basketball IQ, good defender, not a great defender. He probably would never make an all-NBA team, but or all-defensive team, but you know, definitely better than average, and I think a pretty effective defender. You know, obviously smart decision maker with the ball in his hands, very talented at getting to the rim too. But the fit and the availability have always been the question mark with him around, like, the shooting. Is that going to be a good fit next to Paulo and Franz? And then you have just the availability. If you're not available, it's hard to be relying on. So I'm interested to see kind of what they do with around the point guard, whether it's moving him or just kind of letting him expire into the summer as they potentially target someone else. It's going to be really interesting. Do you have any like people at the deadline you kind of like, granted, we're just fantasizing here, but do you have anyone like if you could make a call and that trade might work out, like that you would go make the call for?
It's such a boring trade. I have one guy who I
like.
Let's
hear it. Let me
before I put the name on there, because you're gonna go, really, dude, really, Richard. Like, you're gonna think it's stupid, but if I make the sales pitch first, it actually sounds a little bit intriguing. So I want this big man who is not a rim protector. He's not a good defender. Just putting that out there. But he shoots, he passes, and he's extremely efficient at the rim. I'll let you guess who you think this is. It's a bench player, but
Christian Wood?
No, God, no. I did that once in Dallas. I don't want to do that ever again. No, it is Kelly Olynyk, actually, in Utah,
who you could
do almost a straight one for one. I mean, they're like $5 million apart, but I think both teams are in flexible cap positions. and they're both expiring deals. Yeah, I just ran the trade machine. Completely works. Fultz helps with Utah getting a point guard. Some people say they don't need him in Utah. Some people would I've talked to have said, yeah, that would be a good fit. Really depends. I think it's something where it's like Markel Fultz is the younger player. That really depends on what the Jazz want. Do they see Kelly Olynyk as even a playoff rotation player? Could Fultz be one instead of Chris Dunn, for example? Tough to say. That's really what it comes down to. But I really love the idea of Markel Fultz for Kelly Olynyk. I feel like I had someone else, but that's the one I keep coming back to.
I keep looking at Mo Wagner, right? And we see him in the rotation a lot, and you know he's our scoring big off the bench, and it just like you see the moments in these little sections where it's like, wow, his energy that he is just giving 100% is really helping this game. He's grabbing a couple key rebounds. Like I look at the Suns game the other night, right? And you know that fourth quarter run where J.I. and him were just kind of dominating is like. Yes, obviously J.I. gets the crown for that moment, but Mo Wagner was really huge there. I think he had like 5 offensive rebounds, which is not the norm for him. He actually had a pretty bad scoring, like efficiency night that night. But it's like, you look at him and that's just like an easy upgrade that you can have there. Like, because he's not really a great passer. He's inconsistent with his scoring because his shooting from deep isn't very good there, and he started off finishing at the rim this year like really high level, but that's like trailed off recently as well. So I'm like, I see your path with the Kelly Olynyk kind of as that Mo Wagner replacement, in my opinion. At least that's how I would fit him into the rotation. I'm still of the believer of like, okay, yeah, we definitely can improve the bench rotation with the bigs, but I'm still like, yeah, he's got an injury history, but let's go check out Malcolm Brogdon, you know. If we could do Markel Fultz, give that team a little bit of cap flexibility, where they could maybe overpay for some vets this summer, you know, and then we get Malcolm Brogdon, who, yes, has some injury issues, but he's been relatively healthy the last 2 seasons, and he can play on, off ball, good defender, got some size, but you're not like stuck with him long term. Kind of gives like another bridge gap year for Anthony Black to kind of play underneath him, and he can, you know, Malcolm Brogdon can start or come off the bench. Like that's kind of like my boring trade too. But obviously who knows what's going to happen with this front office. I really have no idea. Man. So like this team has a lot of holes to fill in my opinion, right? There's some bench questions with the bigs. There's point guard questions long-term. There's just overall bench improvement. And I want to just like kind of pause there and like, I'm talking about Cole Anthony, because he is a key player for this bench unit. He has just been up and down this year. Starts off really well. That like that stretch of games where the Magic were just winning those first like 25 games or so. He and Joe Ingles and Mo Wagner are like, I think the Magic had one of the best scoring benches in the league at that point in time. But all of a sudden, he has just not been himself. Granted, he was dealing with some injury there. But, like, Richard, what are your thoughts on Cole Anthony? Is this just the player he is, like, and should expect going forward?
No, I don't think so. I think the flashes we got early in the season were pretty real. I mean, heading into tonight, if you split the season into 2 halves, I mean, he was pretty dang good. I mean, up until around Christmas, he was killing it. And like, I think he had the real role. There wasn't as much redundancy for a lot of it. He didn't have faults. Anthony Black was just kind of the clear cut third guard, but now it's almost like 1A, 1B, kind of 2. And the 2 can change or the 1B can change a lot of nights. It really does feel like that. So I don't know. I go back and forth of what his real fit is with this team, and that is concerning. But just looking at, like, this is how I saw it. This is, like, the first half he was good, and the first half of him being good, I should say, of the season, and then the second half has been pretty rough. First 26 games, and it's not an even split, 15 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists on 46% shooting. But then you break it off right there, and things go south. This is heading into tonight. The next 19 games, I mean, it's pretty brutal. 9 points a game, 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists on 37.5%, 25% from three. But this was really the first good game that he's had since the Knicks game, I would say. And that was obviously an important one to him. I feel like he plays hard against the Knicks every single time with his dad and everything.
He does. But yeah.
Nicole, look, if he played like tonight, where the scoring wasn't that impactful, but I think he really impacted the game a lot as a playmaker, making his teammates better. And that's the stuff I know he's capable of doing. Cutting the streakiness is the next step for him. And everything he's done in his career has pointed to saying he's going to do it, because at the beginning of his career, he wasn't that aggressive. He didn't have the confidence. He got it. He got better as a shooter. He got better as a playmaker. He did what he needed to do. Like, that's in his control. I don't think he can really do much for himself defensively, but everything else, I do think there is a lot of promise for. And because of that, I think this is something where the consistency will get ironed out, especially as he gets older. I'd love to see Orlando keep him and not just sell him because he's an awkward fit for 2024. Hopefully, I think there's ways to clear out that fit and make him a clear cut, either sixth man of the year, or I think that is the outcome, actually. I wouldn't start him.
A couple thoughts there. I mean, one, he just signed a 3-year contract extension. I think he's definitely on this team next year. You know, I think maybe the year or two after, there could be some question marks, but I doubt they would give him an extension and trade him before the extension even kicks in. That would just kind of be a little weird, in my opinion. But when I think about him and his streakiness, as we've been talking, I think of Cole, and we often think of this guy who makes, you know, tough shots from behind the arc. But I often feel like those shots can be ill-advised, and he hasn't been making tough ones recently. And I wonder if the balance for him to become more consistent is just making better shot decisions from when to take a three versus when to drive. 'Cause he is quite a good finisher at the basket. You know, and can get to drawing flat fouls. He's a good player in the paint. You know, is that something that also resonates with you?
Yeah, I mean, the getting to the paint stuff is something where, he very clearly has the athleticism to get there. It's what does he do when he's there? Because I don't have the stats in front of me now, but does he draw that many fouls? I feel like the answer is no. And I maybe he does sometimes, but I feel like it's a once and a half, at most. He's getting a couple.
He's not a big time a foul, you know, grabber. I mean, tonight he had seven, but you know, 7 free throw attempts. But I don't think that's the norm for him. And again, I don't have the stats either, but I just feel like it helps him find his rhythm when he's able to go and make a close basket instead of just settling for the weird 3-pointer that's early in the shot clock or something like that. Yep. You know, that's where I think he gets in trouble, is just settling a little too soon into the shot clock for a three. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about trade deadline. We've talked a little bit about Cole Anthony, the second unit. One thing that we know this team struggles with is shooting, right? On a consistent, granted, tonight's a weird night to talk about it. We hit 48% from three, but normally this team is not a good 3-point shooting team. We've had some moments here and there with Chuma and Caleb Houston kind of going off, helping that second unit. You know, Paolo Banchero started at, you know, he's an improved shooter this year. He's might have settled around a little bit, but at one point he was shooting three at 40%. But we drafted this guy named Jed Howard. I'm turning the conversation, and I know I didn't prep you for this, but we drafted this gentleman named Jed Howard, who is lighting up the G League. He is playing. He just got named player of the game tonight when he was playing for the Osceola Magic. He had 26 points, you know, with 3 rebounds, 4 assists. I don't have his stats off the top of my head, but it feels like he's shooting a pretty darn high volume of three, and getting a decent clip of them in. I think maybe around 37%, if I had to guess. That's where I feel like I last read it. And maybe you have the stats as you were pulling them up as I was talking about this. So before I pass it off to you, I want to give you two questions. One is, you know, same question I asked about Anthony Black. What did you think about Jet Howard back then? What did you think, you know, during the draft process? Were you surprised that we picked him? And what do you think about him now? That's question one. The second question is, a lot of Magic fans are frustrated that he's basically only playing in the G League and not at all contributing to the main club at a high level in any capacity. Like, what is also your thought around that?
Yeah, good question. So for first one, I would say I didn't think Jet was the guy I would have anticipated. I should have known better given that he went to Michigan and like the affinity that Orlando has for Michigan players. I should have known. But I was torn. I didn't like his decision making, and I really didn't like anything away from his catch and shoot game. There's a little bit of like off the dribble upside, but for me, I would have gone Grady Dick, but at this point, it's a wash. Like Grady Dick has barely contributed in the NBA. So for me, I personally don't mind Jet sitting in the G League. I do think there are games where it's like, okay, Joe Ingles is out, for example. Caleb Houston's not playing, or he might be playing. What if Caleb Houston's off, which isn't like some, you know, rare feat? Like he's been a little bit streaky at times this year. Would it hurt to have Jet Howard? Absolutely not. Ultimately, though, I do think the G League is really good for him. I think it gets him acclimated into making quick decisions all the time as a shooter, and that's something that he's going to have to do in the NBA. So I don't hate it. There are definitely times where I'm like, well, the Magic needs shooting. How is he not up? Which is concerning. But entering Monday, I have his G League stats for all of the G League season, both regular season and the showcase part of the season. He has a negative assist to turnover ratio, 33 to 42. He is averaging, let me pull this up, per game. So per game, he is averaging 20.9 points a game. That's on 46% shooting with 39% from three, 83% from the free throw line. Again, they only shoot like one free throw though every time. So it's a little bit weird of a number. He doesn't do a whole lot of other things. So a little bit of rebounding. You might be shocked into hearing he doesn't get many steals or blocks and only two assists. So ultimately he's been okay. Like, but he's doing what he needs to do. He has been making quick decisions, sometimes the wrong ones, but it's okay because they're growing pains and it's the G League and he's shooting very well. So the hope is, I think next year's you have him ready and that he's more of a draft and stash kind of approach than draft and play and put in the G League at times.
Do you feel like, as far as player development, when you see these players getting, you know, like this is a very long time for an NBA player to be assigned to the G League, but he's playing a role that is going to be like, if, for instance, if he was playing in some of those moments when, you know, Caleb might be off and he's okay, let's put Jet in for the second half of the game and see how he does. Like, it's a different role than what he has in the G League, where he can be a lot more on ball and make those decisions. Like he's got an expanded role right now, right? Like, he's on ball a lot more. Yep. If he were playing with the Magic right now, he'd probably just kind of be more of like a catch and shoot kind of guy and not a decision maker like as much as he is right now. Do you think, as a for player development, that this expanded role that is different than how he would be utilized is good for him long term?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of the things, a misconception I've seen with draft scouting is that like you should only be doing what you're going to do in game kind of thing. It's like a Michael Jordan, I think, said something like that, where it's like only practice what you're going to do in game. And I actually don't agree with that in this day and age. I think having the ability to like play, you have to do everything in this NBA. No matter what you do, you have to do everything. Unless you are an extremely specialized veteran at this point, you have to be able to do everything at any given time. And because the whole thing with the NBA, I feel like, is everybody is asked to do something every once in a while. And obviously anything is not something, as we've all learned watching the Magic broadcast, they're not the same thing. And I think for me, it's just like, you have to be able to get comfortable. What happens if you're coming off the screen, the defense stops you, there's 7 seconds left on the shot clock. What do you do? And that's a very common play. Like, that is not uncommon. It happens once a game right, for most shooters. So you have to be able to do that. And that's why getting those reps, as many as possible, helps happen where, okay, you're playing in the fourth quarter, 7 seconds left on the shot clock with 4 minutes left in the game. You're down two. What you do is going to make a massive swing at this point. So he has to master that to make sure he's not becoming a liability.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And like, these are reps that he's getting now that he likely would not be getting with Orlando. And I try and explain it, on Twitter sometimes, but it's just like, it's, I think these 30 plus minutes a game he's getting right now is more valuable than the maybe 10 minutes he would get every five games with the Magic. Like, if that, you know, it's like, I understand fans' frustrations of like, I want to see what they got. But you know, it's, I think we're doing okay. I couldn't help but think, wow, Derek Lively, pick 12. He would look awesome in a fucking Magic uniform right now. But we have Jed Howard, who hasn't played a minute of NBA experience, really. And you got Derek Lively, who has just been like crushing it for Dallas all season, you know, and does get talked about pretty highly on a regular basis throughout the league. So it's like, little bit of frustration there, but that's okay. I do have high hopes for Jet that he will be a good gunner for this team in the near future, and we'll see what happens at the trade deadline, right? You know, there's always going to be opportunity there, so maybe that'll open up some minutes for him. But anyways, we got a fun, exciting season coming up, right? You know, we're halfway through, a little bit more. You know, Paolo's gotten a lot of love for the All-Star break that's coming up. It seems like he's going to be voted in by the coaches as an All-Star. You know, we're going to be a playoff team. What are kind of like your thoughts for the second half of this year, you know, that you're going to be looking for and hoping to see with this Magic roster to hopefully get them to a good playoff spot to get that next step of development for the main guys?
Yeah, I'm curious what happens with just really how their offense consistency looks. Like, they've had some moments this year where I feel like they've looked like you said at the beginning of the season, like, their bench was remarkable. How do they find bench consistency going forward? Are they going to have to rely more on depth, more on Paolo and Franz? What do they do with that? And I'm just curious to see how far their offense goes, because the offensive upside is actually very high with this team, despite, I feel like, what people think, given that, like, you know, they don't have a lot of shooters. I think there's a lot of ways to counter that, at least in the regular season. In the playoffs, it might hurt. But also, if you get to the playoffs at this point, and I'm not talking playing game, like truly seven game series, you've exceeded expectations. So I'm not worried about that. For me, it's just, I want to see what are the highest level flashes of offense they have going forward. Is it something that they've been doing all season? Is it something new? Was it lightning in a bottle? I think that's really what I'm looking for. I think the defense, we all know at this point, as long as Jonathan Isaac is healthy, they're going to be fantastic. And even without him, they'll still be very good. But what happens to the offense the rest of the way? That's my main storyline I want to see.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's totally fair. It's pretty sound that we know that the defense should be consistent, and it's like, what can we do offensively? Because we have some powerhouses offensively in Franz and Paolo, and how do we utilize them and the rest of the team to, can we be like, I think our offense right now is like, I'm guessing, but last time I looked, like a few days ago, I think we were on like 27, 20, 26, like, could we get to 22, 21? We're at one point, I think earlier in the first quarter of the season, we were around 22 in the standings. Like, could we get there? And you know, even if we make the play-in, like, I hope it's at least a spot where it has to be a double elimination and not a, you know, you just win, yep, win one to move, yep, on. Like, that would be awesome for this team. And you know, we'll see. I think ultimately the playoffs are going to be a really good, really good development path for a lot of our young guys that have never been in a place like that. Even guys like Jonathan Isaac, who were in it his first year, but, you know, or second year, I apologize, but, you know, haven't been in it since. So it'll be good to kind of like get back there. I think that is the ultimate path to development. So, with that being said, I would be remiss. I want to wrap up our conversation with this. I'd be remiss. We do technically have a pick in this draft. It's probably, if we keep it, going to be in that like 16 to 18 range, if I were to take a guess, right? You know, just outside the lottery. what are we looking at right now? Give me a couple of thoughts. Give me like two or three players maybe I should keep an eye on.
Yeah, Dalton Kincaid at Tennessee fits everything that you want, I think, on the wings right now in Orlando. I think it's the number one fit. He can come off screens. He's a guy who transferred from Northern Colorado. This is his third school. He transferred from a JUCO school before that, played a couple years in Northern Colorado. He's a fifth-year senior, I believe, at Tennessee. He is 6'6". He just had a 39-point game, 32. He had a 30-something point game. I think it was 39 against Florida. So I know Malik would not be happy to hear that. But I think he's somebody that, like, it's all very real. He can score very easily off of drives. It's nothing fancy. Shoot off the dribble, spot up. He's somebody I really like. Another name I would look to. Look, I don't know where he's actually going to get drafted. A lot of these guys, the stock changes so much.
It's early.
Yeah. Wuga Popwar at Miami. He is really intriguing. He's about, give or take, 6'5", 1 inch, give or take. Plays on the wings, extremely athletic, really intelligent, plays defense, shoots off the dribble and spotting up, can pass, just really creative, and also has like that really hard work ethic. I think he'd be great.
That's awesome.
I didn't say a Michigan player, so sorry.
That's okay. We'll probably draft a Michigan player with at least a second, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. This is going to be a really interesting time because even if we like don't trade our picks, like, you know, it'll be interesting if they decide to draft two players, you know, unless they can convince, you know, the second rounder to you know, they're drafting him for a two-way spot. It's just going to be, it's kind of going to be a little bit of the same that we had this year if we draft two players, because it's like, where do they fit? You know, it's going to be really hard for this Magic roster to continue, unless they make some big consolidation trades, to get these young guys on the floor that they're drafting. And I'm not saying don't draft, like, you got to draft, and it just means we have to adjust our expectations as a fan base. Like, hey, this guy might not hardly ever see the floor his rookie year, you know, kind of like what we're seeing with Jet. But it'll be interesting, you know, you can't develop everyone all the time, all at once, as far as on court, there's other paths to development. So, you know, thankfully there's more paths to that with, you know, a third two-way spot and G League's getting, you know, more involved with the main club. We're seeing that right now with Jet Howard. So, it's going to be a really interesting time. And, you know, we're definitely gonna do some more check-ins with you as we get closer to that time period. It's still a fun, exciting season. You know, hopefully later this week we're celebrating Paolo getting named an All-Star reserve. We'll see. 100%. As I mentioned at the beginning, Richard, you are found just about everywhere. You're on Twitter or X. You are doing draft content now. And you are also with the Locked On Podcast Network. I just want to first off say thank you for joining the show, give you an opportunity to just plug anything that you have going on right now. Yeah, man. Do you got anything exciting you want to throw out there?
Yeah, I mean, nothing super crazy coming up, just a lot of scouting trips to individual games. Be going to a few places around the country in the coming months. But yeah, just more of the same, Locked On NBA Big Board, as well as MavsDrafts.com. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of the scouting features on there.
And what days are your what days are Locked On Big Board?
And actually, so there's no set day anymore. It's once a week though.
Cool. Awesome. Love that. Check out everything that Richard is doing at Mavs Draft on X or Twitter, whatever you refer to it as. Go to MavsDraft.com, check out his work, and tune in to Locked On NBA Big Board with the Locked On Network. Richard, I really appreciate you coming on. Fans, thanks for tuning in for another episode. Let's go Magic. Peace.